From Washington, I'm David Schultz, and this is Talking Tax. Would it surprise you to learn that the federal government allows corporate executives to undervalue their personal trips on company jets, essentially giving them a significant tax break? Well, it does, and Democrats in Washington want it to stop. This is just one of a flurry of proposals this month that crack down on some aspect of how private aviation gets taxed. President Biden's budget proposal for the coming fiscal year would increase taxes on jet fuel and change the depreciation schedule for corporate jets. Meanwhile, the Treasury Department and the IRS earlier this month announced an audit campaign geared toward people who write off personal use of airplanes as business expenses. These proposals are shedding a light on the subtle and not-so-subtle ways tax policy affects the private aviation industry. To learn more about this, we rang up Mike Kircher, a senior attorney advisor at NYU's Tax Law Center. Mike spoke to Bloomberg tax and accounting reporter Aaron Schilling about how the private jet tax break works and why the government even offers it in the first place. But first, he spoke about why private jets are such an attractive target for lawmakers looking to raise tax revenue.
Yeah, it's no secret that private jets are controversial. Some people think that private jets have a disproportionate climate impact. A recent study shows that they account for about 1.3% of all transportation emissions in the U.S., and others see them as an emblem of inequality. Regardless of how you feel about the private jets, from my perspective, focusing on the integrity of the tax system, it's hard to come up with a reason the U.S. government should be providing subsidies in the form of tax expenditures for companies and executives using them.
And I want to zero in a little bit on that letter from the Senate Democrats requesting the regulation changes from the IRS and Treasury, because I know this is something that you've talked to us about before. And I was just wondering if you could explain specifically what that regulation change is and why you see it as something that needs to be changed.
Yeah, definitely. From a legal perspective, there's nothing on its face wrong with an executive using the corporate jet for personal travel. But both they and the company need to report that as income to the executive. The question, though, is how much income you have. Under normal tax principles, the income should be based on fair market value of the flight. But this can be tricky to value in the context of a corporate jet flight. So many years ago, Treasury and the IRS came up with a safe harbor formula relying on the Department of Transportation's CIFL rate. The problem, though, is that the formula in the tax regs undervalues the trips by quite a lot compared to the fair market value.
So what you're saying right now is with the CIFL, the standard industry fare level calculation, it always, almost always undervalues the personal use of corporate jets compared to what the other calculation would be, which is the fair market value of a charter flight?
Yeah, always is a tricky word, but almost always is definitely fair. This is effectively a subsidy for the private use of corporate aircraft. So depending on the size of the jet and whether the employee is a control employee or a rank and file employee, a multiple is applied to the DOT CIFL amount to determine the value of the flight. If you do some Googling, you'll see that advisors and others write up pretty explicitly about how the formula undervalues these flights, and they pitch this as actually a benefit to this use.
Mm-hmm. How did we get this calculation in the first place that caused these trips to be undervalued so much?
I think it really was the IRS and Treasury seeking an administrable approach to valuing these flights, right? It's very hard to determine what the precise value is of a flight that isn't available commercially. So these rules were written based on a formulaic approach using something that was already in the system, the DOT CIFL formula. But that formula is based on trying to determine the proper cost of commercial flights, which of course are far less expensive and valuable than corporate jet flights. When they were established, I think they just set the formula's multiples too low, and they've just never been revisited.
Do those multiples change over time with inflation or anything?
The multiples do not. The CIFL calculation done by DOT is revised, I think, quarterly, but the multiples are baked into the regulations under Section 61.
Interesting. So how would the IRS and Treasury go about changing that?
I think they would need to open a guidance project, and they'd have a couple of different options here. they could either go back to sort of the normal or general rule that says that you have to determine the fair market value of the flight. They could do that based on some kind of comparables analysis. That would be like getting to the quote right answer, but it would add a lot of complexity and valuation questions to the system. Valuation problems are difficult for the tax system, as we've seen across a whole range of issues. So the other option is they could just go into this sort of formula, the safe harbor for the CIFL calculation, and they could just increase the multiples to an amount that better approximates income. So, you know, if you think that the CIFL formula is resulting in income being reduced by 25 times, they could just increase the multiples by 25 and get to something that's closer to the rate. Companies might say, okay, well, in some cases, that's getting you to too high a number. And if that was true, they would always be able to use the fair market value approach and determine the value that way. But this would still sort of preserve all of the administrability of the current regime, but reduce the tax subsidy.
So there's the letter from the 6 Senate Democrats, but is there a broader appetite for changing these specific regulations?
I think people find this issue captivating because they do struggle to understand why we would have tax subsidies for the private use of corporate jets. So I think there could be broader resonance, right? And then obviously the, you know, president's budget reflects the fact that this is part of their administration's forward-looking view. So maybe, but we'll have to see as time goes on.
So say they do change, you know, the way that this is calculated. What happens next? Do you see any companies challenging the change? And is there maybe a sort of unintended downside of the change?
I think that companies might resist and say, whatever new multiple you choose is too high. And then you're just kind of discussing what the proper valuation of these flights are. But anything that is higher than the current multiples is going to reduce the size of the subsidy. And of course, it's elective, right? And so to the extent that something is elective and is just a safe harbor that allows for an administrable approach on an elective basis, it's hard to imagine a successful challenge to the reg, because of course they can still just use the fair market approach that is the sort of true or natural rule.
Gotcha. Which is more complicated, but probably more accurate to what the value actually is.
Exactly.
And I'm curious, do you know if there's been a major push to change tax subsidies or tax benefits for corporate jets just in the past? Like, has this sort of happened before and then something came of it or nothing came of it?
I think historically the CIFL issue has kind of flown under the radar, but there are other tax subsidies for corporate jets that Congress has at times sought their sights on. So one is accelerated depreciation. When a company buys a corporate jet, it can generally depreciate the cost over 5 years, potentially subject to bonus under the 2017 law. Whereas when an airline or a shipping company puts a jet into service, it's usually subject to 7-year depreciation. So there have been proposals to harmonize that treatment or to better reflect the economic life of corporate jets. So you've seen some action in that space, but nothing on CIFL. And one of the new things in the budget that I haven't seen as much action on in the past is an increase in the fuel taxes for private aviation, which is meant to encourage or require private aircraft to pay their proportional share into the aviation trust fund that funds a lot of the FAA's activities.
And with that increase in the fuel tax, what do you think that would be a meaningful tax reform for the corporate jet industry?
I think that the budget says it would raise about $2.5 billion over 10 years, but it's tricky to say exactly what its impact on the corporate jet industry is, because it would apply to all general aviation aircraft. Well, most all general aviation aircraft, which is just broader than corporate jets alone.
General aviation. So would that be not commercial, but it could be like a private jet, not a business jet?
It could be a private jet, not a business jet. It could also be like a Cessna that you take your friends up with into the air with on the weekend.
Ah, yes, I do that all the time. Interesting. The 5-year depreciation for corporate jets versus the 7-year for commercial jets is also in the proposed Treasury Green Book. So I'm curious, like, it doesn't seem like it's gone anywhere. Do you know, do you have any idea of sort of like why it's sort of continued to be proposed but hasn't gotten to the finish line of actually making a change?
No, I don't have any great insight. you know, it would be a change. It would raise, I think they say, about $1.5 billion over 10 years, but no great sense of why it hasn't come to become policy.
Mm-hmm. Do you see a political divide on any of the things that we've talked about in terms of tax reform for the corporate jet industry?
I think one of the bills that would have harmonized depreciation for private and commercial aircraft was the Jets for Vets Act, and that was a bipartisan bill. And that's just to say that's one example where there may have been some bipartisan interest. I'm not sure where that stands today. I think that there's pretty broad populist concern with subsidies for corporate jets, and there are populists in both parties in Congress. So you can imagine bipartisanship here, but I think it's too early to say.
That was Mike Kircher, a senior attorney advisor at NYU's Tax Law Center, speaking with Aaron Schilling. And that's it for today's podcast. You can find up-to-the-minute news on the latest tax and accounting developments at our website, news.bloombergtax.com. That website, once again, is news.bloombergtax.com. Today's Talking Tax was produced by myself, David Schultz. Martha Mueller-Neff is our editor. From Washington, I'm David Schultz. Thanks for listening.
In a global tax landscape that changes by the day, it's what you don't know that can leave you exposed. At Bloomberg Tax, we provide market-leading intelligence and practical applications to help tax professionals work smarter, faster, and more accurately. Our solutions provide the insights you need for game-changing outcomes. To revolutionize your performance in real time, the difference is Bloomberg Tax. Learn more at pro.bloombergtax.com.